This is the Muscles and Management Podcast, where we build your body and your business. Talking all things training, sports performance, and business for athletes and aspiring coaches to enhance your training and better your career. Muscles and Management is brought to you by Challenger Strength with your host, Jerry DeFilippo.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 27 of the Muscles and Management Podcast with your favorite meathead, as always, Jerry DeFilippo. Today, I'm really excited to bring on an important and, you know, key guest, you know, amongst all the guests that I've had so far who have been great. But this is the first professional ball player that I've had on the podcast, Eric O'Flaherty. Eric had a very successful major league career as a relief pitcher, you know, made his name with the Atlanta Braves, also pitched for the Seattle Mariners, Oakland Athletics, New York Mets, just, you know, really great guy who is luckily taking some time out of his day to come on and talk all things training, you know, specific to baseball, some, you know, fun stories in his career. We're going to hear about, you know, the time he had a bench press competition with Brian McCann before a game that he didn't think he would pitch. And lo and behold, he was called in to throw and, you know, some interesting stuff ensued. So just a lot of enjoyable things on this podcast that you guys are going to love. You know, look for Twitter as well. I'm going to be posting some follow-up GIFs, videos, things of that nature that you'll hear Eric and I reference on the podcast. Give those a look and be attentive. You know, just enjoy this episode. I'm not going to, you know, ramble on here. I want to get to the interview. You know, and please, as I always say, hit me with feedback. You know, subscribe, rate, and review if you enjoy. And thank you guys, and I will see you on our next episode. All right, everyone, I'm here with Eric O'Flaherty. Eric, thanks so much for coming on. I'm thrilled to have you, and can't wait to talk and, you know, get some good stuff covered.
Hey, man, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, pleasure's mine. We kind of, you know, went back and forth the last couple days getting this set up, and when I was putting the outline together for the show, I didn't want to waste any time, you know, boring the listeners or, you know, even the conversation itself, and I wanted to ask you about a story you tweeted about a little while ago, because it was funny to me and very interesting. The infamous bench press, pregame bench press competition with Brian McCann during your time with the Braves. Give us a rundown on that.
Yeah, so I'll just preface it a little bit. Me and Brian McCann, we were like brothers when we were teammates. You know, we ripped on each other every day, loud talked each other, just pretty much trying to humiliate each other every single chance we got all season long. So the whole team knew how competitive we were with each other, you know. So anytime one guy would burn or get the other dude or kind of one up him, the whole team would just, you know, pile on, laugh, hoot and howl, and kind of play it up. Even if what we said wasn't really that funny, they just liked us getting mad at each other, so just egged it on all the time.
Yeah.
So with BMAC, everything turned into a competition, and he's one of the funniest dudes I've ever played with. He knows he's kind of chubby and sweaty, and he's a slow runner, and he's bald, and yada yada yada. He doesn't care one bit, you know. He just owns all of it, laughs at himself, and generally just clowns around all day until it's game time. Then he flips the switch, and he's in. You know, he locks in once it's game time. So basically, we had some form of pissing contest every single day, and it would just turn into a sideshow for the whole team, and we'd talk shit, and you know, something like, I'd shoot a Dasani bottle into a trash can, and if I missed, he'd go make the shot, and I'd have to make it. And it turned into just, you know, you'd get your adrenaline flowing over something simple like Dasani bottle trash can war, you know, something so dumb. So, I mean, but your heart would be racing because, you know, we'd want to one up each other. So anyways, on to the story. So like a lot of times when you throw, you know, before you get completely loose, you kind of lack extension, your muscles aren't warmed up, and you'll just cut the ball off a little bit, and it turns into this air cutter is what we call it. The ball just goes completely sideways. It almost just slides through the air. And it's a fastball that it just takes off hard glove side, and your catch partner hates you for it. It's pretty much the nastiest pitch in baseball, but nobody can really replicate it. I think Mariano's really the only guy that could do it in the game. So I'd pitched like 3 days in a row, and I'd had a conversation with our manager that I pretty much just misunderstood as me being down, unavailable, not pitching under any circumstance that day. You know, the only way I was going to pitch is if the starting pitcher, you know, died in the second inning. Otherwise, I was out of that game. So I decided, you know, I always did all my weight training after the game, but I decided I'm going to do my weight training before the game today. Since I'm not pitching, I'll just have more recovery for tomorrow. So I went in the weight room and started getting the lift in around, you know, 4:30 before batting practice. And Philly's one of the only visiting weight rooms that actually has a bench press in it. And I couldn't help myself. I jumped in for a few sets. And I'm just going to do like 3 sets of 10 with 185, just get a nice little pump, you know, feel good day because I wasn't pitching. And everything was fine. You know, it's going great. I'm almost done. And then BMAC walks in, right? And he's drinking a fast twitch or a P4 or something to get amped up for the game or for BP. He just starts loud talking to me. He's like, man, I wish I was a relief pitcher. Must be nice playing twice a week. And he said, you know, comes over to the bench, press, oh, you're benching girl weight today. That's cute. You know, just kind of egging me on. He's like, that's why you got that bird chest benching 185.
And he's a strong dude, right?
You know, he doesn't hit the weights too hard in the season, but he's just naturally a strong guy. And he's bigger than you think.
Yeah, for sure.
So everybody starts laughing, and he's puffing his chest out, feeling himself, and I'm kind of getting crushed at the moment. So I was just like, let's go, asshole. Bench press competition right now. Because I knew I wasn't playing. He's like, nah, man, I can't. I'm playing today. So I'm like, you know, you pussy. Get out of here. So everybody starts laughing at him. He leaves the weight room, and, you know, I was good. You know, I felt like I won. So I'm feeling good. I get like 3 or more sets in, and I'm about to shut it down. 5 minutes later, BMAC walks in with the entire team behind him, amped.
Yeah. So wait, were you going for like weight, for like reps at a certain number? Like, what were you guys trying to do?
Yeah, so basically he comes in with the entire team behind him. He's just amped, and he felt like I kind of punked him earlier. So he got a little riled up. He comes back in, and he puts another 20, 30 pounds on the bench press, right? Mm-hmm. So it's probably like 225 at that point. Got the whole team in there. Everybody's amped up, screaming at us. And we wind up having this ridiculous bench press competition. We both got, I think, 8 to 10 reps. And he winds up winning because I don't go all the way down, right? But because I'm a pitcher, I was always taught to, you know, stay just past 90, you know, mm-hmm. not go all the way to the chest. He's bouncing it off his chest, and he gets a couple more reps, right? Meanwhile, I think it was harder to stop the weight versus bouncing it.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Right? So that my excuse got nowhere that I was a pitcher. So he wins. He lets me know. The whole team just crushes me. He starts dancing, clowning around to whatever 2 Chainz song was playing at the time. And I'm just done for the day, man. I'm going to lay low. I'm not going to talk to anybody. I'm just going to grind through this day and kind of stay out of the mix. So I go out for BP, lay low. I eat my pregame spread, and I'm just kind of, you know, I'm walking out to the game, and I can already feel my chest getting tight. Like the first inning, I can feel my chest just tightening up. And I'm, you know, I'm so glad I'm not pitching today. So we're good. You know, I don't have to pitch, but I could feel my chest getting really tight. And like I said, the manager said I'm not pitching. So I was in the clear. So Derek Lowe started the game. He's got a no-hitter going in the 7th. So now I know I'm really not pitching.
I hate to cut you off. A quick question. Is this Bobby Cox at the time still, or who would be?
It's Freddie Gonzalez.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So this was 2011.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, Philly's a nightmare to pitch. It's loud. They've been winning the champ. They've been winning the division 3-4 years in a row already. But we've been chasing them. So it's a big game. You know, it's so Lowe starts giving up a couple hits in the 7th and starts limping around. I guess he'd gotten some kind of blister or something like that on his foot, and it exploded in the 6th inning. We didn't know that. And all of a sudden the bullpen phone rings and they say we need O'Flaherty ready for Howard, who was in the hole. And now I'm like, what? oh, shit. So it kind of caught me off guard, and I just started to panic and rapid fireballs all over the place, but I couldn't get loose, man. My chest was so tight, and I hadn't done any stretching or warming up because I thought I wasn't pitching that day no matter what. And about 2 minutes later, they called down, and they say, O'Flaherty ready. Eddie Perez, our bullpen coach, looks at me. He goes, you ready? And I was like, dude, I don't think I'm going to be ready tonight. I might need another 25 minutes to get loose. And before I can say anything else, Eddie just says to the other, you know, he calls back. He says, yeah, he's ready. He's ready, baby. Oh, put him in. A minute later, I'm in the game. And there's runners second and third, no outs, 3-4-5. And the Phillies lineup coming up and game on the line, crowd going crazy. Huge situation, huge chance for me to step up and, you know, step up for the boys and get this win, you know, get out of a big jam. McCann calls the first pitch sinker to Howard, and it's like 87, and it just dies on its way to the plate, kind of scuds up there. BMAC looks at me like, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
You know, I shrug back to him, basically saying, that's what we're working tonight. That's what we're working with tonight, buddy. That's
yeah. You should know why this has happened.
Yeah, exactly. So it kind of all clicked for him. You know, I see it all register in his head why I'm throwing just poop salad up there. And then he looks at me and his eyes get all big and he kind of clenches his jaw and slams his fist into his glove and gives me a look like, all right, I got you, dude. We're getting through this. And so that look he gave me where he just locked in, you know, it kind of fired me up, gave me some extra adrenaline. Yeah. He had an ability to do that for his pitchers, just to motivate you, you know. So I get back on the mound. He calls the sinker again and I let it eat. But my chest is so tight that, you know, the ball just kind of halfway to the plate, it just cuts and goes straight down to the right side.
So Howard's in the box at this point.
Howard's in the box.
And this is just cutting away from him, like just dying away.
He swings and misses it by like a foot. And and B-Mac looks back at me like, can you do that again? And I look back at him like, shit, man, I don't know what I just did, but keep calling that. So that happens. You know, I probably threw about 9 of those to the next 3 hitters. I wind up punching out the side, getting out of a huge jam. No run scored, nothing. We win the game. And I wound up pretty much cementing my role as a setup man right there in the middle of that game because of a bench press competition. You know, baseball's so stupid, man.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
The story. You know, I just came in throwing air cutters because my chest was so tight. You know, I wasn't about to try to do it again. I kind of learned my lesson, but you know, it's funny how it worked out.
Yeah. So, quick funny story on my end. When I first talked to you and. You know, we were working on having you on. I was obviously all pumped up, like former big league pitcher and everything. So I'm texting my boys, and they're all big baseball fans. And I'm like, oh, I'm gonna have this guy on. You know, he's just famous story. You know, he had a bench press competition with Brian McCann before a game, and he came in throwing like Mariano Rivera cutters. And they're all like, yeah, bullshit. Like, if that were the case, he would try to do it every time he went out there. And I'm like. It's not that easy just to know how it makes you just throw cutters. So defend me on this one. Give me like a little bit of a, you know, why behind why you wouldn't try to do that again.
I would if I wasn't worried about my health, you know. I mean, it's there's a reason it was doing something messed up that day is because I wasn't throwing right. You know, it's kind of – my chest was so shortened up and fatigued that I just couldn't get through the ball and extend it. But if – you know, maybe I could try it now because I'm not doing shit, but you know,
I want to go try it. To be honest with you,
you should. Yeah, you see how it goes. You'll definitely feel terrible throwing, and that's a big part of why I'd never do it again because I felt miserable that day, man. I mean, I was throwing the ball as hard as I could, and I felt like I could barely get it to plate. You know, it was just taking a right turn. But yeah, you know, I wouldn't do that again just because I'd be worried about my health, how that affect me. You know, not having that range of motion because that's basically what happened. I lost a ton of range of motion. That's why I was throwing a messed up pitch, you know?
Yeah, for sure. You have some – I think I remember from last time you tweeted about it. You have some gifs from that game and everything, right? Like there's actually some like footage from
it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, wherever the tweet is. I mean, it's –
I'll have to find that and share it with the podcast when I post it.
Yeah, you could find it and kind of just put it in the thread or whatever. It's pretty funny, man. The ball's just –
It's like moving, like it's crazy.
it's weird, man. That's why Mac looked at me like, can you do that again? And I was like, I don't know, just call it again, let's see what happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, a couple of them did sink, and then most of them just cut about a foot and went, they kind of dropped too. It was like a 90-mile-an-hour slider or something like that, man. It was weird.
Yeah, so no grip difference, nothing. It was literally just like range of motion's different, your chest is all tight. Like,
I mean, I just couldn't extend. Yeah. I was basically getting to my release point, and then just my chest was so tight, I just yanked toward third base.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So a couple things. So obviously, I wanted to ask you about the bench press, just given the story alone. But you brought something up when you were explaining, you know, how you were bench pressing that day, and it's kind of like another part that I want to add to the question. So you talk about, you know, not going all the way down, going to about 90 degrees. For any one who doesn't know why he might do that, The old tale, you know, going through time with training and baseball is like, you know, you didn't want to get too deep on a press, put, you know, too much strain on your shoulder and the anterior part of your, you know, forward part of your shoulder, things like that. And a lot of literature and a lot of big time trainers, like I know Cressy's a guy that's talked about that and how, you know, you actually do not want to limit the range of motion because it limits the, you know, scap activity in the press, things like that. But I guess my question for you would be, you know, the bench press, you know, historically being deemed as a, you know, baseball no-no and, seeing more and more trainers you revealing some positives. Kyle Rogers being a guy at Driveline that's very much behind the bench press and, you know, dispelling the negatives behind it. Like, how do you feel about it? A little more on how you used it, and like, would you do anything different, you know, today if you were still playing and you knew, you know, what you know now?
I wouldn't be afraid of it. You know, I've benched my whole career. I rarely did it in season because I did notice that the barbell made me a lot tighter than dumbbells. Mm-hmm. And generally in season, I didn't go much heavier than, you know, 60 or 70 pound dumbbells. I always tried in season to stay with something that wouldn't really get me sore. You know, you're just kind of trying to maintain, get a little pump. You know, it feels good just to get a pump and get blood flowing.
For sure.
But every offseason I bench, usually working up to, you know, by the end of the offseason, I could do like three sets of 10 with 225, which for a pitcher is plenty. You know what I mean?
That's a lot. Yeah, that's a lot for anybody, really. People don't realize how hard that is. That's a lot of weight for 10 reps.
Yeah, no, I can't do it now. I've been trying to get back to it. It's taken me a little time, and I'm just doing it for fun now. I don't even have to pitch. But, you know, starting the next offseason, I would basically be right back to square one because I'd missed so much time between doing it. But, you know, I did a ton of push-ups and presses during the season. I just wouldn't do anything that I felt like was going to really, really challenge me or make me sore, because as a reliever, you got to be ready to pitch every day. But like I said, man, I bench pressed my whole career and never had any trouble.
Yeah, no, for sure. You know, you mentioned not going, you know, too deep in that 90 degree. Would you change that if that were, you know, you were still playing today in training? Would you let yourself go deeper into the press?
I've been doing it now. That's why I can't get back to that three sets of 10, I think, because I'm going deeper in it. You know, it's a harder rep, but I wouldn't be afraid of it if somebody came to me with a good argument. I'd definitely give it a try.
What were a lot of the coaches, you know, as you're coming up through high school, college, et cetera, you know, what were some of the, you know, reasons behind, you know, any trainer you might have had at the time, you know?
Somebody told them.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? No one knows why.
Nobody knows. Nobody even dug into it. It's just, you know, somebody told them don't go past 90. So somebody told me that, and I said, okay. And that was, I mean, that was pretty as much as advanced as baseball training was when I was in high school.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's changed. It's obviously changed very quickly. You know, even, you know, me as a young coach and having some of my baseball guys come to me and like, oh, my pitching coach says he doesn't want me doing a chin up or he doesn't want me, you know, doing this or that. I'm like, well, you know, you're an overhead athlete. Like, how are you going to tell me that you can't do, like, you're not allowed to do chin ups? I don't understand that. It blows my mind.
You know, you just got to be real careful with pitchers because that, you know, extension is so important. If you start shortening up your lats, you'll get into a situation where you're, you know, you just, your scap won't move as well and things won't happen for you. You know, I think the scary part is if you don't know how to maintain mobility and work on your mobility, if you want to work out hard upper body, I feel like you got to work out twice as hard to maintain that mobility.
Yes. And the movement quality and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. And that wasn't around. You know, I said this on the Driveline podcast, but I never heard thoracic spine mobility until I was 28 years old.
Yeah.
Now these kids they're working on it when they're freshmen in high school.
Yeah.
So it's kind of just, you know, it's completely a different field now. There's so much more exploring you can do now that people know how to maintain mobility.
Exactly. That's a great point. I mean, I think the problem is that so many people have this idea that if you're doing one, you can't do the other, right?
Right.
Like, you know, this pitching coach might say, hey, I don't want my guys lifting, you know, overhead or doing a chin-up, let's say, and then you, you know, point to the lats, which is a great point. And I remember reading an article whether a year or two ago, you know, Noah Syndergaard had those lat issues. And, you know, he does a lot of heavy training and he put on
like 15 pounds of mass, I think.
Yeah. And he had a horrible season in terms of injuries. Like it just wasn't, there was like a whole MRI issue where he like didn't go. And, there was like a whole big controversy around it, but he ends up getting linked up with Eric Cressy, the next offseason. And that was like one of the biggest things they fixed was like the tissue quality and the movement.
Yes.
And everything with his lats. It needed to change.
Well, and you got to be careful. You know, it depends on your athlete. Some athletes, you just walk them into the weight room, you hold their hand, you tell them what to do, and you walk them out. But a guy like me, if you tell me something's good for me, I'm going to do 8,000 reps of it until it becomes a problem. And that comes with knowing, you know, who your athletes are. If you say, hey, this exercise right here is good for you, okay, I'm gonna work up to five sets of 7,000. You know, that's just my mindset to where too much anything becomes a bad thing. And I think that's, you know, that's a downfall of a lot of athletes when you start telling them that an exercise is good for you or even okay. he might have been lap pulling the whole rack that off season.
And doing nothing to address, like, you know, the stuff that comes along with that.
Right. It's like, you, if you're going to do something like that, you got to foam roll it, and you got to hang and stretch that lap back out and get it back to neutral, or all that strength, you can't even access it when you're shortened in the length of the muscle, and then trying to pitch and get your extension. It's too complicated to do on your own, I think, as a pitcher. You need help.
Listen, when you're that level, like, you know, Syndergaard's a perfect example. Like, he's a Ferrari, right?
Right.
You know, you can't like own a Ferrari. I mean, maybe like there's a rare person that can do it, but like, if you own a Ferrari, you're not going to just sit there in your driveway and work on it. Like, you're having a mechanic that knows what he's doing, take care of it, service it. Like, you need that.
Yeah, I mean, I got an R8. I don't even know how to open the hood. I mean, just being honest, I'm not touching that car. If it's my truck or something, I might mess with it, but those really nice cars, man, I want a pro working on it all the time.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. And it'd be stupid not to. Like, it's a disservice to the car not to do that. And disservice to the athlete, the pitcher, whoever, for sure. You know, two-part question. Like, I kind of broke this McCann thing down into two questions I had on it. But, you know, moving on from the bench press, was this the only time you had lifted or trained prior to a game? I know you mentioned that before the story about, like, you know, usually you would do your training after the game, but you felt like you weren't going to pitch that day. And I'm asking this more in the terms of like an activation type of thing. We've heard stories like Nathan Eovaldi squatting before he pitches, things like that. You never did anything like that?
Look, everybody's different. For me, what worked best was just basic glute activation, core activation, hip stuff, just working on my range of motion before I throw. I never did anything that I felt like was going to shorten me up before a game. I know a lot of guys do like to do something like that, but for the most part, man, with baseball, you want length. You want all those levers being able to separate. Some guys are just built for it. Some guys, like Eovaldi, can do it, but you could take another 15 baseball players and have them try it, and they might tear something apart when they go out there and try to ramp up max effort, and that just comes with knowing your body. I was just big into foam rolling. You know, I do a lot of banded hip work, things like that, to get myself moving right. And then after the game is when I would usually do heavier lifting and things like that.
Yeah. I think, you know, even beyond lifting, I wrote an article on this actually, and this wasn't trying to turn into a shameless plug, but I guess it's going to sound like one. I wrote an article on this about, like, you know, post-activation potentiation, just nerdy term for, like, you know, doing a speed barbell lift or like a med ball throw or something, kind of activating the muscles and stuff like that. And it's like some of the benefits of that and like what it could bring, you know, if you're doing things like that prior to like a ballistic activity like pitching.
Ramping up your nervous system. I think that's huge.
Yeah. And I think, I guess, moving this question sort of to that area, I've talked to a lot of coaches and a lot of guys who are sort of starting to utilize this kind of stuff, like overhead med ball throws, you know, having, you know, hitters do some kind of core activation in the hole or on deck, like stuff like that's really, you know, moving to the forefront of baseball, I think.
For sure. You know, that's kind of why you're seeing what you're seeing on the field. The game's never been more athletic, I don't think.
It's insane.
It's crazy because, you know, you have all these pitchers. And that's kind of the change in the game that I've seen happening. All of a sudden, you have all these pitchers that are able to squat and build a ton of strength and actually transfer it to the field. Versus in the past, if you didn't know how to mobilize and prepare yourself for the game, you might just shorten up if you're squatting all the time and you never worked on your mobility and everything back. You wouldn't be able to separate your levers. But now guys know how to get as strong as possible and maintain their mobility. So you're seeing guys throw. You see, in every team has a guy throwing 99 and plenty of guys sitting 96, 97, where when I got called up to the big leagues, man, if you threw 96, everybody's on the top step checking it out. It's just the game's completely changed in that aspect. You're watching the balls guys are hitting. I don't know if it's the balls are different, but guys are hitting bombs, man, and everybody's strong. Everybody's athletic. I think that it's definitely a big thing where guys know how to prepare their body to be at their absolute best on a daily basis now. And you know, some guys even go into the weight room and do a little core activation. You'll see pinch hitters doing core activation, hip activation in like the fifth, sixth inning. Everybody knows how to get themselves where they need to be now, where before it was just kind of, you know, jog some poles and try to stay loose.
Yeah. Like, similar to what you said, you know, about velocity, like, I would equate, you know, back in the day, or even, you know, back in the day, 10, 15 years ago, like, the guy throwing 96, 97 being, like, a big deal, top of the step of the dugout type of thing. Like, the equivalent of, you know, if a trainer back then, or even 20, 25 years ago, knew their stuff, and they were considered, like, a, you know, industry leader. It's like the amount of trainers out there now who have this, you know, information has increased just as much as, like, seeing 96 as, like, an everyday thing. So it's kind of broadened the whole thing for everybody.
Yeah, and there's a lot more room for a trainer that actually knows what he's talking about to grow now, especially in baseball. It used to be kind of a old boys club where if you started coming around talking about all this new stuff, it was more threatening to the to the guys that had already established themselves, because it made them feel inadequate. When you come in, you're talking about mobility and thoracic spine stuff and you know, getting stronger and nutrition and all this stuff that they're not pros in. It was almost a threat that they'd get exposed. For how little they knew, you know, a lot of trainers were just operating the ice and stim machines and taping guys' ankles up.
Yeah.
Now it's gotten so advanced and it's been accepted because, you know, whatever teams were kind of at the forefront of that, other organizations take note when they start getting results and hiring good people. And so, you know, the last 10 years, the game's just completely changed from top to bottom as far as, just strength and nutrition and just developing athletes. It's really incredible how far it's come.
Yeah, no, it's you know, I'm 25, and even since, like, I was a kid watching the game, it just you know, I was telling my dad, you know, we had the London series on Saturday, and, you know, we're watching all these runs, and he's like, "What the hell's going on?" And obviously at the time the whole discussion hadn't taken place yet about you know, the impact of the stadium, you know, on the, you know, pitchers and flight of the ball and everything. But he's like, you know, all these runs, it's crazy. And I end up actually, you know, wherever the conversation took us, I take my phone out and I'm searching through Pitching Ninja's tweets, and I'm showing them Ottavino's slider.
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Dad, like, this is, like, insane. Like, the stuff you saw, like, when I was watching ball with him as a kid in the early 2000s, like, it's done a total 180. It's crazy."
Yeah. And, well, the thing I really wish I had when I was playing is the Rapsodo.
Yes.
Just the spin measurement, being able to, there were seasons where I couldn't really strike people out with my slider, and it felt the same coming out of my hand. And you didn't have the feedback of the spin angles and the spin rate you were putting on the ball that could have been really helpful. You know, a quick story. I always knew I had a good slider, but I'd never really, gotten it under, you know, I'd never gotten spin rate feedback on it. And I was talking shit with Sam at Driveline, and I told him the first day.
Congrats to him, by the way, just real quick.
Yeah,
just shout out to him.
Pretty cool for that. Yeah.
Just got a job with the Yankees. It's amazing. So, you know, shout out to him, but go ahead.
Yeah, I hope that goes well for him. So I was just talking shit with him, and I said, "Look, man, I guarantee you I can spin a ball 3,000 RPMs, whatever that is." Mm-hmm. And so I was training there. I hadn't even been off the mound yet. My first day on the mound, I told him I could do it the first time I got off the mound. And he didn't believe me because, you know, 3,000 is supposed to be elite or whatever. But yeah. I'd never really tried to spin the ball as hard as possible. I always just tried to work on the angle it was coming out of my hand and just kind of let the grip take care of it.
Yeah.
So the first day we get up on the mound at Driveline, I hit, I think, like 3105 or something like that with the slider. And I'd never had that chance to really get that feedback, but now I look back like, man, I wish I would have taken that shit into a game or had a chance to experiment with that against hitters when I was playing. So, you know, we didn't have that feedback when I was playing. You could go 2 months and you can't get anybody to swing and miss at your slider. And, you know, it feels the same as last year, but you don't have any feedback or measurements to tell you, you know, you just had video. And sometimes, you know, on video, the pitch can look almost exactly the same, and the hitter swings and misses it by a foot on one, and the hitter crushes the other one, and you really don't have any gauge of what you did different. So there's a lot more guesswork when I was playing. I really wish I had that when I was pitching. So I think that's part of why you see a guy like Ottavino be able to do what he's doing, is he has the tools and the feedback. And
he built his own lab.
Exactly, and it paid off. So that wasn't even an option. What kind of lab were you going to build in 2005, 2008?
Oh, yeah. If there was anything out there, it would have been so expensive. It wasn't, like, mainstream yet. It was like getting a computer in the 80s. It would have been, like, an insane amount of money. It's just
Yeah, and you don't even know if you're going to get any return out of it. So, you know, I think the pitching is just going to continue to get tougher, and it's going to be tough for hitters to catch up.
I mean, yeah, especially if they're, you know, the debates in the hitting circle have just become, like, so stuck, and it's terrible, like, that the advancement is lagging behind so much because people just can't get over the most simple, you know, arguments and topics.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I think pitching probably went through that earlier.
Kyle talks about it. Bodie talks about it all the time, like the forums and stuff 10 years ago, like the stuff he was saying that was getting, you know, people were debating with him, and it's like hitting is going through that now.
Right, yeah. So, you know, I think it'll come around and it'll have to, but I don't know, man. You see some pretty impressive swings. I'm not going to say the hitters are that far behind because you're seeing guys let the ball get deep and hit some crazy opposite field homers right now. I think a lot of it's the ball, but I think hitters are figuring some things out too. So we'll see.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I remember, like, again, you know, this past weekend having the London series on, and I'm just sitting there talking to my dad and my brother-in-law, you know, about the game and trying to explain to them the best that I can, you know, how things are changing. Obviously, like, I get to see a lot of it, you know, talk to guys like you and stuff like that. And I'm trying to, like, share with them the differences. And they're like, my dad's like, oh, like, how do these guys, you know, hit this 100 mile an hour pitching, like the time to react? And I'm like, Dad, to be honest, it's not the velocity that's really doing it. Like, you'll ask any of these guys, it's like I can hit, how'd you hit that ball? I don't know. It was 100. It was straight. Like, I can handle velocity.
You just got to get your foot down and start swinging earlier. It's the breaking stuff that, you know, comes out of that same slot that's what the guys are able to track now. They're able to track the slot the ball's coming out and line it all up where it's just as deceiving as possible for the hitter. So, yeah, they're going to have to make some kind of change to catch back up.
Yeah, and I'm trying to explain that to them. I'm like, this, it's just not like, you know, you're putting your average person in there and they're having trouble timing 100 miles an hour. It's like these guys are the 1% of the 1%.
They're best in the world.
Yeah, it's like the, you know, Ottavino's that throw 96, you know, with a two-seam action and then hit you with a slider out of the same, you know, same spot, the ball's coming out of his hand. Like, that's what's making it tough.
You know, if it wasn't for liability, I feel like every stadium should have a guy like me that's just barely out of the game and let just civilians jump in the cage and try to hit off them. You know, you pay like $10 a pop or something for an AB off a former big leaguer. That would that humble a lot of people pretty quick.
Yeah, and maybe we can just pay the annoying, you know, ignorant people on Twitter who run their mouth. We'll pay them to get in so we could have enjoyment out of that one.
Yeah, just get humiliated real quick.
What are you swinging at, dude? I'm like, the guy's throwing 102. It's like he's facing Aroldis Chapman. That's what he's swinging at. Like, I don't know. Yeah,
it looks really easy on TV and – you know, credit to big leaguers for being so good that it looks that easy, but that stuff's happening fast, man. It's impossible to understand until you get in the box. But if people tried to hit a 95 mile an hour fastball, that'd be pretty much the end of their discussion about what are guys swinging at. They'd understand how quick you have to be and how little time you have.
Yeah. It's truly insane unless you at least played at some level and you could understand, like, the level you played at is half or a quarter as hard as the one you're seeing on TV.
Not even a quarter. It's,
yeah, it's 16, whatever. Yeah, whatever it is.
You're talking the best of the best in high school. I was the top ranked player in my state coming out of high school. I got into pro ball and I was just another guy. You know, I wasn't even good. Yeah, I had to figure out how to be good at that level, but I couldn't just show up and be good there. And that was rookie ball. And then you climb six more levels to get to the big leagues, and you got big leaguers that have been getting better at the big league level for however many years. It's incredible how talented the guys are and the skill it takes to play baseball.
Yeah, shit. I mean, even like I played Division III baseball, and it's like I was one of the better players on my high school team. And, you know, I get to college, it's like every other guy's like me. It's like, holy shit. Like, this is – and that's Division III. Like –
yeah.
People don't realize how good, like, Division III baseball players can play. It's like, they're like, oh, yep. D3. It's like, no, you got guys that are maybe, like, missing, you know, one tool away from, you know, playing high-level Division I baseball.
And, you know, as a big leaguer, I'll go down to rookie ball for a rehab game or something, and it's like pitching against little leaguers.
Yeah.
It's like children. You know, it's the levels advance so much as you climb. But, you know, people are never going to have that perspective, so it's almost a waste even trying to convince them of it.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, I'm more so, it's just fun to talk about between the two of us. I don't really give a shit if it changes their mind or not. But like you said, you know, right. I have a friend of mine who I played, you know, travel ball with, club ball, growing up through high school. And he ended up playing at Monmouth University in New Jersey, and ended up getting drafted by the Cardinals a couple of years ago. And we were talking one day, and he's like, "Man, like you don't understand. Like I'm a lefty throwing low 90s. I get to the, you know, I get to A ball, rookie ball, whatever it is, and the pitches that I was getting guys to swing and miss at, you know, in college and at a Division I school, like these guys are just spitting on it. Like,
yep,
I'm throwing my best changeup, you know, 2-2, it's fading, and the guy just looks at it
like it's nothing.
Yeah,
yeah.
He was like, it shocked me.
And it just keeps getting tougher as you climb. So yeah, big leagues are good.
Yeah,
shocker.
Yeah. So speaking of, we, you know, got a little bit into how things have changed on the technology side and stuff like that. But moving back a little bit to, let's just get on that strength training side a little more, you know, comparing your experiences, you know, from high school through college and the professional level, like obviously you're going to see some changes in philosophies, but, comparing facilities, level of care, like what are some real eye openers in terms of how that progressed and what you saw?
Pretty much what we've already talked about, man. The nutrition when I came into the game was just, I mean, I think we were eating cat food when I was in rookie ball. It was just terrible. They just threw food to you. You know, the training was pretty much you just ran until it was more of a, it was more of a mental challenge. They wanted to challenge you mentally just to kind of weed out the weaker guys. They weren't really, nobody really knew how to get you better on the baseball field. They just knew how to challenge you mentally so you'd be tougher when you were out there, I guess is the best way to put it. The nutrition, like I said, was just terrible. That's changed. Even in rookie ball, they have good food now. The facilities, you know, most big league clubhouses had a visiting weight room, but never would you see a visiting weight room on the or even a weight room at a minor league park. If you got lucky, there was a weight room. Pretty much everything's come full. I mean, just it's not even comparable to when I came in the game. And like I said, that's why you see, you know, even with the training staffs, I never got cupped. I never got scraped. I never really had any type of soft tissue work all the way up through the minor leagues. And now these guys are getting it 3-4 times a week. You know, there's a fine line where you're just being soft and just wanting to be, you know, just cared for, and guys just want to have a spa day. And I don't really look, I kind of look down on too much time in the training room, just getting rubbed on and stuff, but there's definitely value in it. So that's come a long way. The tissue work, lengthening that tissue back out, pretty much everything's just, it's not even comparable to when I came into the game. And most of it's happened in the last 6-7 years.
Yeah. Like the top, you know, cream of the crop, best training 10 years ago is like standard now everywhere.
It's the top cream of the crop training 10 years ago wasn't even in baseball yet. Yeah. They were trying to break through. So,
but let's just now, say like, you know, 2011, 12, 13, whatever it was, when you were in the bigs, like the level of care you got at the big league level is probably available to some guys at like the Division I level now.
For sure. It's probably available in high school now.
Yeah.
I feel like that's just, you know, in sports, especially baseball, I feel like it's come a long, long way the last maybe 10 years where, people are starting to really realize how much better you can get a baseball player by taking good care of them.
Yeah, for sure. It's like almost like, you know, the internet being, you know, present in, I don't know, I don't want to say a number because I'll like butcher the statistic, but like how present it is in like every household in America back compared to like 2005 when like 10% of people had it.
Yeah.
It's like that basically.
And you know, that's probably a big reason why people are able to communicate and finally break through a lot of barriers in the game of baseball that you couldn't really get through before. Because like I said, you know, if you knew too much, there's trainers in the big leagues that have been there for 40 years. So if you had learned and acquired a lot of knowledge that they didn't have, you're almost threatening to them and they wouldn't want you to come up to the big leagues. So I think for guys that were really smart and intelligent, they were just better off going elsewhere with that knowledge.
Like independently trying to grow and, You know,
maybe college or just starting their own strength training facility for high school athletes, things like that. But it was really tough to break through in the big leagues. And the last 5-10 years, they've started, you know, the people running the teams are really open minded and want to get the most out of their investment. So it's really come a long way.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. Even looking at like, you know, good segue here. We talked, I mentioned that internet analogy and the training, like, the opportunities that something, you know, like Twitter has afforded so many bright minds and how, you know, professional teams, especially major league teams, are like using that as a source to, you know, bring trainers in, bring strength coaches in, pitching coaches, whatever it is. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's a lot more open-minded now and everybody takes note and sees what you're doing. You know, it's it's pretty cool that there's way more avenues for people to get their knowledge and information out there now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Something, this is a question I really wanted to ask you that I was interested in. Teammates over your career, you know, I'm sure you've had a lot of, you know, you've played with a lot of really, really good players, but like who would you say was the most dedicated to their strength and speed training in terms of like the work they were put in, you know, things they were doing pregame, postgame, offseason, like who ranks up there for you?
I'd say Mike Minor. He's a pitcher with the Texas Rangers. We were teammates in Atlanta together. Probably stands out as just the most just dedicated, strong, trying to do every little thing he could. And I think his career actually took off when he took a step back from all that a little bit. Because, you know, this guy would be squatting – he'd be squatting 400 pounds maybe a day or two before he started or even on a start day. I don't know. But you just – anytime you went in the weight room, Mike was doing damage in there. And he's just a freak athlete. Huge vert, fast, just incredible athlete. Always training really hard. He did the mobility. He did everything. He was, I think he was a Vanderbilt guy. I'm not 100% on that, but he was a high pick, and he was a guy that in college I think really saw the results of everything that the weight room could do for you, and he kind of teetered on that line of this is good for you.
Yeah, let's do 7,000 reps.
yeah, and that's just his mindset, and you'll find a lot of that in pro ball, and I think in athletes in general. So that's where you have to really monitor him. And you know what? It's funny because I always remember this quote from our strength coach at the time, Phil Falco. We're in the weight room at whatever time, and Mike Miner's in there with 400 pounds on his back doing sets of probably 10 to 12. And Jair Jurgens is doing one leg squats with no weight. And Phil said, why am I more worried about Jair right now than the guy with 400 pounds on his back? And Jair was hurt a lot. So that's, you know, it was kind of a joke, but it was –
He was a really talented dude. Like
yes, and everybody's body works different. But you'd have Minor squatting 400 pounds, and Jair could barely do a one leg step up onto a box, and they both threw 95 miles an hour.
Yeah,
so that's how crazy baseball is in that aspect. Is to get to that point where your body and you're getting the most out of your body. Everybody kind of has a different route. And I think that's why it's really difficult to be a strength coach in the big leagues and complicated, because you have to unlock every player individually and figure out what works for them. But yeah, Mike was probably the most just ridiculously dedicated to his strength and speed training I've seen. And he was a pitcher. You know, most position players don't do anything because they're playing every day.
Yeah.
But, you know, on the other end of things, I played with Brett Laurie, who I never saw lift. I know he lifted in the off season.
His forearms are the size of like my quads.
He's the most shredded.
He's insane.
Explosive white guy I've ever seen. He could, you know, he could be, he would come into the weight room and he could set up a 60 inch box jump. And with like two warm up jumps, he's nailing it. Yeah. I mean, the guy is just, if you've ever, I don't know if he's too active on anything anymore, but he used to post videos to his Instagram feed that were just ridiculous. I mean, his hamstrings look like just giant biceps on the back of his leg. I've never seen a more shredded, probably the most shredded guy I've ever played with. Most explosive, everything. Probably just the best hands down athlete I've ever been around. And I think he lifted in the off season, or maybe he was just a complete specimen. I don't know, but it just goes back to every single player is different, and you just figure out what unlocks them in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, he looked like a guy that could, like, you know, snap the bat over his, like, when he struck out with the barrel, not the handle.
he could probably honestly put it in his mouth and bite it in half. The guy was such a specimen. You know, I wouldn't limit anything that I could accomplish strength-wise.
Yeah, no, he's crazy. So Mike Minor, that was cool. You know, crazy routines or habits you came to see from some teammates going through? Obviously, you know, he said he was a guy with, you know, 400 pounds on his back, but like, what were the most ridiculous or insane things you saw guys doing pregame, postgame, whatever it was?
Nothing really, man. I mean, it like I said, I was kind of heading out on the game when this stuff was really getting popular. And the crazy thing is, you'll see, like I said, you see Jair could barely do a step up onto a box, and Mike can squat 400 pounds. They have the same velocity. You'd see guys that smoke every night, that drink every night, and show up, and they're the best player on the team. And then there'd be another guy eating kale salads and spinach every day, getting 15 hours of sleep, could barely crack the roster. doing, you know, or you say, you know, Anthony Recker. You ever seen that guy?
Yes.
Catcher for the Mets. He's just jacked, ridiculously jacked. He's huge. And there'd be somebody on the same team like Juan Lagares who didn't work out the whole season, had more pop in the plate than him. You know, he'd hit balls farther in BP and hit more homers in the season and was a better hitter just showing up.
Yeah.
So, crazy routines. I thought Miners was kind of crazy at the time, but more and more guys are starting to get into stuff like that.
And it worked for him. Like, it depends what works for each guy. It's kind of like what you're getting at, really.
That's the whole point I pitch is you just have to find out what works for each guy. I think the most dangerous thing to do as a strength coach is have a cookie cutter approach and have everybody on the same program because, you know, I think most guys in baseball are just expert compensators. So you have to keep eyes on them to make sure they're not compensating wrong or you load them up with a ton of weight, they're going to get hurt.
Yeah, no, I mean, it really depends on how they're moving. Even how, like, you could have a guy do something for a couple weeks and they just don't respond well to it. I see that all the time with guys.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of guys will get almost frustrated with the athlete and kind of come up with their own reasoning why their program's not the problem and the athlete just doesn't want it that bad or he's not strong. But that's pretty dangerous because, you know, like I look at LeBron James and how his feet turn out. I bet you he doesn't ever squat in his life and he's one of the best athletes on earth.
Yeah.
Because I just don't think that would work for his body.
Yeah. And if I think there's been a couple of videos, like if he is squatting, you know, he's going, you know, doing a quarter squat. I mean, you have to understand something. First of all, the guy's like 6'9". So
yeah,
squatting at all for him with weight on his back, like getting, you know, ass to grass, quote unquote, is going to be impossible for him.
The way he's built.
Yeah. And then you also have to look at a couple things. Like, I'm not going to be a guy that sits here and says, like, you know, quarter squats for life. Like, there's, you know, time and place for everything. But like a sport like basketball, like a lot of the, in terms of the plane of motion and the range of motion, is not that deep.
Right. Right. So why do you want to build strength at the bottom right there when you know, they're never going to have to get out of that position?
Yeah. Like if you're talking about a 12 or 13 year old who's just starting out strength training, like I don't really give a shit what sport he's playing. Like he's going to need to just learn how to do regular squats and performing the full movement's going to have so many benefits for him. But if we're looking at a guy that's 30 years old or 34 years old or whatever, and is at the top of his game, like we can start to narrow things down a little bit to like what he's actually doing.
Exactly. Yeah. So, that's the kind of stuff I think about where somebody might get frustrated with if they were training a young LeBron James and almost mess him up trying to do exercises that he's just not built for. Meanwhile, you got probably one of the best athletes on earth sitting right in front of you. And, you know, the goal with him would just be not to break him, you know, just keep him loose.
Like, let's not damage him. Like, what we're going to do with him is probably, like, the percentage chance of it helping him is not going to be very high, but the percentage chance of hurting him is going to be very high.
Yeah, just maintain him. It would be and I think there's a lot of athletes like that in baseball where they're just gifted, and that's why they can just drink beer every night and be better off versus if they spent their whole day in the weight room trying to get better.
For sure. You know, this is going to anger me. I really don't want to talk about them. And you know what I'm getting at. I don't want to plug them because they piss me off. And if it was up to me, I'd burn every one of them that existed on the planet. And I'm not even exaggerating when I say that. But you actually jokingly tweeted or sent this to me when we were going back and forth on Twitter. Like, hey, man, like, I know you're not a fan of them and that you have some like great reasoning. But like, I had a little success with Bosu balls.
Yeah,
you know, give it what it's gonna. I'm gonna have a stroke possibly during this, but give me a little bit of a breakdown on how you used them. And I know you mentioned ankle mobility and some stuff it helped you with in terms of that.
Yeah, I was on that bitch every day. you know, if you want to look at the numbers, 2011 was my best season. I had 78 games with like a 0.98 ERA.
I have your baseball reference up just in case that came up. It was 0.98 over 73 and two-thirds innings.
Yeah, so, all right. So I started training on a Bosu ball after I hurt my back in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And you can look at the next 5 years of my career after that was basically almost every exercise I did for my legs was on a Bosu ball. You know, I think the reason it worked really well for me is because it was mainly one-leg exercises, and I have a huge imbalance in my lower half. My left leg is way stronger than my right leg. So anytime I would do...
And that was your drive leg. That was like your the leg that was pushing off the rower.
You know, if you think about it, I've probably done a million more pushes off my left leg in my lifetime at this point than I have at my right. Just throwing that many balls and practicing and doing all this stuff. Maybe a million might be high, but it's a
significant it's a staggering difference. Yeah,
hundreds of thousands. So it's just, if you look at my, you can even look at my legs now today, and my left leg's just bigger. So I think that's a big reason why it worked for me was anytime I'd get under the squat rack or something, I'd just favor my left side when I got in trouble, and I'd build up that imbalance, and those imbalances are what wind up making your back hurt. You know, when your left leg's way tighter and you're pulling into one hip and you're trying to rotate and play baseball, it's just it's a bad combination for me personally. So I did a lot of single leg BOSU stuff, and you know, my hardest throwing season, I didn't touch anything heavier than like a 25-pound dumbbell for my legs.
Interesting.
And I just lived on the BOSU ball, and I sat 92 to 95 that year.
So I'm going to say this just because I have to back myself up a little bit here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Kind of moving back a little bit, the LeBron James analogy we use, but like you being a guy that had put all those years into, you know, your training, and you're obviously a professional athlete at the time. Like, I think my biggest gripe with a lot of this is, and I can sit here and go over like the physics of BOSU balls and why I don't believe in them, you know, till I have gray hair, but it's not going to like, that's not the point of why I'm bringing this up. But, you know, you being a guy that had been through the literal ringer in terms of like going through your career, training, different method, but building all of that like natural force production and all that stuff I talk about, that would be a time where if that was like a modality that worked for you and it's unique, but like it did something for you, I'm okay with that.
Buddy. Yep. Just go ahead, buddy. Do your thing.
But like my beef, I think, is that, you know, so many of the not 1% of the 1%, and like, you know, that you were that at the time, like that worked for you, but it doesn't mean it's going to work for the other 99. You know what I mean?
Well, I'll put it this way. I could throw 94 and I could dunk in high school without ever doing a leg workout in my life. So I was good at I had a strong enough, explosive enough legs that I was just born with, in my mind, where I didn't really need to build power through my lower half. I just needed to not mess it up. I just needed to not hurt myself. And I think that anytime I would start squatting and stuff, I would start to dominate the exercise with my lower back, and I'd just tighten up and get hurt. I didn't have the core control to really keep my pelvis neutral when I'd squat and do things like that. I'd always turn it out, and just things like that, they just didn't work for me. You know, I got my feet turn out naturally. I'm not the best at activating my glutes. It's like something I have to battle with all the time. So for me, I just would have been better off showing up to the park versus trying to load up heavy weights.
Yeah.
And I think the BOSU ball was just more of a maintenance thing like that for me, that kind of just got me activated, got everything locked in, made me kind of stabilize a little bit, and kept me from hurting myself in the weight room. But I was still able to spend a ton of time, you know, getting a sweat and feeling good in there.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I mean, by all means, I have no problem. Like I said, we could talk about it, we could not talk about it. I have no issue whatsoever, because I look at it as like you were a pro and that it happened to work for you. It's not going to
work for me. But that's the whole, you know, if I have any advice for strength coaches, that's the whole game, is you find out how to unlock every player. And if one player's key is just to not tighten up his lower half or not load up his lower half, and that happens to work for him and he's getting results, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
For sure. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I mean, all right. That made me a little less angry than I thought it would. We're through that now. I think I'm okay. So the last question I wanted to kind of ask you, and then I had a couple responses to the tweet that I posted, you know, with giving my followers a chance to ask you stuff. Just an FYI for you, Kyle Rogers commented and said he didn't know who you are. Just wanted to let you know that.
Who's that?
Kyle Rogers. Yeah, I had never heard of him when I posted your tweet. So I don't know who he is, but that's what he had to say when I posted the tweet. So shout out to Kyle. You mentioned
I don't really know Kyle Rogers, I don't think.
Yeah, me neither. I don't know. He claims he works for Driveline. I think he's just using them as like a, you know, marketing tool for himself. I've never really heard of him either.
There's a lot of Twitter trolls out there. Let's just move on.
Yeah. That Jason Alcar guy, he's another one. I can't stand him, what he does to people.
Yeah.
Just kidding. I love you, Jason, and I love you, Kyle. Talking about the blood testing in season, you mentioned that to me when we were talking. And, you know, in season versus off season, you mentioned some stress level stuff and, you know, testosterone related things, you know, varying through different points of the year. You know, give us a little insight on that.
Oh, so, all right. So the last, you know, 3-4 years of my career, just out of curiosity, you know, because I've always had just interest in fitness and things like that and what's going on with the body. I started getting blood testing done. Just to monitor it, see how it synced up with how I was pitching and things like that. So, you know, it's funny because when I first got released by the Braves, I had gotten – well, the year before I got released, so 16 is when I started doing it. So it's really only 2 years of testing. But mm-hmm. I got tested by this doctor, and, you know, my adrenal glands, she said, was just shot. My DHEA levels were just not even – they were just burnt. You know, I had nothing. Pretty much any stress hormone in my body was through the roof. And I went home, trained, everything like that. Every year when I'd get home after the off season, you know, after the season, I go home the off season, I'd drink beer and eat pizza for a couple weeks and I'd lose 5 to 10 pounds of fat. Mm-hmm. And it never made sense to me until I got, until I started getting all my blood testing done. And what I found out was I just was so active and eating so healthy and basically overtraining, overstressing, undersleeping all the time that my body just needed a rest. After I got retired, you know, those numbers, they never really got better because I continually just trained my ass off and was always running and sprinting and lifting weights and doing everything to exhaustion. You know, that was just – I didn't feel satisfied until I was dead when I was going to leave the weight room, and that was kind of my downfall.
Yeah.
But once I got released by the Braves in 17, I was pretty much just dead set on retiring. So I did the same thing, man. I ate pizza, cheeseburgers, you know, drank a ton of beer, just floated in the lake I live on for about 2 weeks straight. And my blood test came back after that. And my doctor pretty much accused me of being on something. You know, my DHEA levels doubled. My thyroid was functioning twice as well. My testosterone went up like 150 points.
Wow.
My estrogen went down from 30 down to like 21 or 15 or something like that. My good cholesterol was better. My vitamin D was through the roof, and my fasting insulin was the best she'd ever seen it. So she was, you know, she said, you know, what are you doing? Or, you know, is this all natural? What, I don't want you doing anything unhealthy for you. You know, she started kind of warning me about, you know, steroids and shit. And I said, no, here's what I've been doing. You know, I told her everything I was doing, and she was just shocked. But she pretty much just came to the conclusion that I'd just been destroying myself under eating and overstressing for so long that just chilling out was exactly what my body needed to kind of relax and get back to normal levels.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, I thought that was just super interesting that, you know, you can be working your ass off and almost doing damage at times if you're,
you're burning the treads off the tires, basically.
Exactly. So, you know, a lot of players have that common sense where they're just like, you know, I'm tired today. Why would I work out? I'm already tired. You know, they shut it down for 2 days and they keep throwing 97. Meanwhile, the, you know, quote unquote hard workers are just slaving away and treading water, hanging on for dear life and can't figure out why. And, you know, there's a lot more of that going on in baseball than there used to be, because they used to just tell you, you know, just don't even wear yourself out. Don't do anything in the weight room. Just run some pulls and, you know, be okay. And that can be really frustrating as a player. But I look back at it now and I'm like, well, yeah, dummy, you know, those guys had common sense and you didn't. You're running yourself in the ground. Of course, you know, you couldn't perform at the same level as you got into your 30s. I look back at a lot of it and I think, you know, I succeeded in spite of my work ethic in my 20s versus because of it.
Yeah, for sure. No, I mean, that makes absolute sense. It's like, obviously training and a lot of that stuff, it has a tremendous benefit, but it's counterproductive for sure if you're just burning yourself out.
Yeah, if you're not recovering. And you know, I had that same thing happen this December. You know, I'd been getting after it. I'd been just crushing it, getting after it from probably September until mid-late November, and then I hurt my back. And it was the exact same thing. I hurt my back, so I just laid around the house for 2 weeks, having some drinks. It was the holidays, eating cheeseburgers and whatnot, and I got the exact same results. My testosterone went up 100 points. My estrogen went down. You know, it was the exact same thing, and it's funny because I already had that info, and I just fell into the exact same trap.
Yeah, you know, it can happen. Even if you have the info, it's like it's people are we're hard headed. We want to always at least the people that like to, you know, work out and do things, it's like you want to just keep going and going and going. And I have a couple athletes that are their own worst enemy when it comes to that.
Yeah, I definitely fell into that category.
Like, I have a kid. He's in the NECBL playing right now. He's a middle infielder at William & Mary, and I've had him for a couple of years. And when I first started working with him, he was the kind of kid that would like come to train with me at 10 p.m. And I was the lunatic that, first of all, that was there that late. But he would come to train with me at 10 p.m. And then he, you know, before he came to me, he just had a game or he just went hitting and he was working out in his days. He wasn't seeing me, and you see how much he's grown now. Where the playing all these games, like 60 plus game college season, you know, all the games in the summer are taking its toll on him, and it's teaching him, like, he's all of a sudden now like, hey, I got to back off, I need to rest. Like, it's cool to see.
Yeah. And that, you know, I actually, that was another thing that had helped me at times in my career. What it actually came from, mental skills coach told me to look at rest as work, you know, cause yes. he knew taking a day off was really hard for me. And he said, look, you need to look at that as working hard too. You know, you need to give yourself yes. credit for taking a day off and be proud of yourself for that. And
it's funny you brought that up. I actually said that to a kid the other day. It's weird that you just said
yeah,
that.
You got to have that mentality. You know, you have to be able to process it like that, where you are getting better by taking a step back.
Yeah, and how it's a 13-year-old that I work with, and it's crazy. I mean, it's awesome that he has this drive at that age, which is rare, but he's his own worst enemy sometimes. Like, we train 3 to 4 days a week, and he's doing all this stuff at home. And I said to him, like, dude, like, understand it this way. You know, you're going to feel like if you don't do anything, it's bad for you, right? Like, you want to consistently do something. But in your case, as hard as it is for you to say, you know, say no and stay away from, you know, activity, like you just said, it's like, that's work for you.
Yeah, floating in the pool and eating some cheeseburgers might be just what your body needs.
That's here. Actually probably part of your work schedule. Like, you need that.
Yeah, like, yeah, you need to recover and get caught up on calories and just chill for a minute.
Yeah,
it's good for sure.
Yeah. Fielding a couple questions just to wrap up here from my Twitter. We have one from Jake Campbell. Jake wants to know anything you did as a player or something you did as a player that you feel if youth athletes or high school players incorporated, they would see benefits from.
Yeah, hop on that BOSU ball. I'm just playing. I think, you know, the thing that the one thing that helped me the most is just soft tissue work, like foam rolling, rolling out your feet, rolling out your glutes. All that stuff, I think, is just a must, especially if you're playing and training hard and working hard. I don't think there's really any you know, 10 minutes on that thing every day can change your whole day. You get up from that, you can feel kind of warmed up, loose.
Yeah, the neuromuscular benefits are huge, like in terms of like what your brain feels and the pain receptors and all
yeah.
that stuff.
I don't know the science behind it. You know, I'm bro science only on my end, but I know that every time I do that, you know, you can stand up from a good 10 minutes of foam rolling and feel kind of brand new and ready to work, versus you can feel a little dumpy when you get on that thing. So I definitely recommend every athlete, you know, find some soft tissue stuff that they like and just make it a routine.
Yeah, for sure. It's awesome. And then the other question that I had, David Holtzclaw wants to know, did you ever find a pitch that simply clicked? And what do you think the biggest problem in youth baseball training is?
Oh, the sinker for me, man. I started throwing that in 2011 and rode that thing hard for 2-3 years until my arm blew out. I think the sinker was part of why my arm blew out, and I got a little aggressive trying to make it sink too much instead of just trusting the grip. But once that pitch clicked, man, I could throw it almost every pitch for 3-4 years, and just, I mean, it was like a get-out-of-jail-free card. So, yeah, I'd say that pitch or the cutter, either one, but just a fastball that, you know, you can throw for strikes and not get beat on.
Yeah.
And what was the other question?
You know, what do you think the biggest problem in youth baseball training is?
The parents.
It's fair.
I think there's so many parents that are just sucking the fun out of it. And, you know, I've said it before, you have to be born with some natural ability to make it to each level, to the highest level, especially. And there's these parents that think their kids are going to be big leaguers if they just train hard enough, and they just ride them hard, and they make a big deal out of every game. The most important part of being good at baseball is being loose and having fun. Mm-hmm. you know, your movements when you're enjoying yourself and you're not overthinking and you're not conscious or analyzing how you're moving, they're going to be so much more pure, and you're just going to be a better player if you're enjoying yourself out there and relaxed. So I think the parents are probably the biggest problem in youth baseball, just pushing their kids too hard and sucking the fun out of it when, you know, making it to that level, whatever the level they're shooting for, is not really realistic in the first place.
Yep.
You bust your ass, and if you make it there, awesome. But if you don't, you know, you can look back that you did everything you could and worked hard. But the most important thing in youth sports, it's the most fun. It's the most fun time you're going to have playing sports. You know, in professional levels, it's professional. You got to get the job done. It can be really stressful, but you know, you got a lot of parents turning youth sports into a professional sport and making it stressful for the kids. And it just pisses me off, man, when I see parents just sucking the life out of their kids and sucking the fun out of the sport. And I think a lot of parents need to chill out. So that's the biggest problem for me.
Yeah, for sure. I really think too, like, speaking to your point that, you know, when your goals are unrealistic, you're always going to feel like there's a disappointment.
Yeah. Yeah. And even if, you know, even if they are realistic or they're not, it's the parents' goals, not the kids. You kind of should let your kids set their own goals and just enjoy being a kid. You know, you get to be a kid once. And, you know, some of my most fun baseball memories I have in my life, I played a long time or still from Little League and early youth sports and having fun. And you got a good shot at being one of the best players when you're playing youth sports. You know, you get into pro ball, you might be the worst if you even just get your foot in the door.
Yeah, for sure. Terry Phillips says, what's it like pimping a home run off a 60-year-old in a slow pitch game?
Yeah, I'm playing some beer league softball right now, and it's pretty fun. See, I get to be the best player out there on the field right now. It's pretty badass. Yeah. This guy last week, he kept putting a spin on the ball. I couldn't get it. Mark was just, he was getting in on me. I was rolling over, popping up, pissing me off. So I finally got him and I let him know. There's no fence, but I let it eat. So nice slow jog around the bases.
I love it.
Yeah, Mark's going to know what's up next time he sees me.
For sure. I hope he send this to him. He can listen to it at the end. He can hear his little shout out.
Yeah, I'm dominating this slow pitch, man. It's pretty badass. I wish I would have known this was out there earlier on in life.
I have a couple friends who've been asking me to get into it. I might just have to. You might have convinced me.
Nothing more fun. It's pretty badass.
I just want to say thank you for coming on. That was just awesome. I think, you know, everyone's going to love that episode. It was just a lot covered, and it was just, you know, great getting your perspective on a lot of different things. So thanks so much for jumping on a call. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man, that was cool. I'll probably have some questions for Terry and Kyle next week if they get on there.
Yeah, Terry actually texted me this morning. I've had him on separately and I've had Kyle on separately. And we originally wanted to get the two of them on with Steven Oster, and we couldn't make it work schedule wise. So I think we're going to try to do that this week. So you can shoot some questions their way if you want.
Yeah. Just ask Kyle what it's like being all slow twitch muscle, you know, how he's made it this far.
I will, for sure. Any other parting thoughts you want to leave us with?
No, man. Thanks for having me. That was fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again.
All right.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Muscles in Management, brought to you by Challenger Strength. Tune in next week for the newest installment of the show that is changing how we view training, sports performance, and business.